on Detroit, the study of Detroit, Michigan, made by the Violence Commission. And after the Detroit riot of 67, the purchase of guns, of handguns, and maybe long guns too, jumped tremendously there. Detroit has a, or Michigan has a handgun permit system. So they have records of the number of guns being purchased. And it went from 6,000 new guns, new permits in 66 to 17,000 in 68. That's almost triple. And what they did was they compared the figures for gun deaths and for gun accidents, homicides and suicides with the figures in 68 with the increased possession of guns. And what they found was that it jumped disproportionately. And they came up with the theorem, the more guns, the more gun violence. And murders in those 2 years with the purchase of the possession of handguns trebling went up 400%. Toledo, Ohio is a very interesting case because there's also a before and after study on that city. They had a terrible time with people in that area selling very cheap firearms, Saturday night special sort of thing. They were right on the border with Detroit, Michigan, which had strict gun control laws, so everybody made it over to Toledo to buy their guns. And so Toledo got desperate and passed a strict, very strict gun permit system for both the possession and purchase of guns. And made it a law that no one could buy a gun in Toledo unless they had the permission of the sheriff in their own locality. And the opposite happened. The gun deaths way down, all crime in all categories, or crimes of violence committed with a gun went way, way down. Much more so than crimes committed without a gun. So I think we have two very recent studies that show the real relationship. That's one of the things, you know, that the opponents say, that there is no relationship between one and the other. But I think these two before and after studies show the relationship.
Are those in here?
Yeah. Well, the Detroit one's in there. Both of them are in our report.
Oh.
And the other one I just found in the Wall Street Journal. I don't know if there is
the Toledo Experience and Report of the Christian Science Monitor, the Wall Street Journal, International Associate Chiefs of Police Magazine, the Police Chief, and I don't know, four or five different places recently.
It was such a dramatic drop. Now, we're not saying the same thing's going to happen in Oregon. We don't have the same problems that they did. I don't know if we have the same sort of traffic and cheap handguns. But I just think that we must have these laws.
Is the Kennedy Action Group on a national level still attempting to get congressional action on some kind of a gun control law?
No, I think there is no real effort, unfortunately, at the national level. In fact, one of our people was back and talked to Joseph Tidings maybe a year ago, and he said, just forget it on the national level for a while and work in your own states.
Well, they had to defend what they had last time.
You know, when of course, the National Violence Commission has come out with its statements, very strong statements, and they advocate confiscating all handguns except maybe 10% for very special needs. And of course, you know, nobody pays any attention to it. So I think at a national level, the issue's dead until we have another assassination. At the local level, we feel that we have something to say and something to contribute and, you know, something we are able to do.
Have any cities in this area, the north, let's say in the northwest, followed, let's say, Toledo's example?
San Francisco tried to pass one and the opponents got it declared unconstitutional. I'm not familiar with the law.
There's nothing in the Northwest, though.
Nothing.
Although both the National Association of Counties and the National League of Cities are on record as favoring firearms control, even at the local level, by ordinance or whatever. Mm-hmm. It comes when it comes whether who has the political fortitude to go ahead and do these things, it becomes a different matter.
Well, I must say, I hate to betray my ignorance of politics this badly, but while I'm sort of generally aware, I didn't follow, for example, this bill or whatever happened in the last legislature. I must say,
You don't advocate gun control in Grants Pass.
Or that's when packet was here
last... Now, is this the Hunters, really? I'm serious. I really don't know. Okay. I just haven't kept up with it.
National Rifle Association.
It's the National Rifle Association.
Oh.
Is very strong.
At
their Republican state convention last, well, be summer before last, I had experience with this because Davis ducked me as the chairman of the subcommittee that was messing with this, and what we had in there was we had some Candy Action people. We had a big flock of delegates that come more from the John Birch section, I mean, the arch conservative. Who's the guy that ran for senator against Hatfield?
The
guy from Portland.
Walter Huss?
Yeah. I mean, he was...
Huss for us.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was the one that was... he was one of the ones in there very violently opposed to it, and... I mean, just like the same when I parked my car over here, you know, the little sticker on here, you know, the checks registered their gun. It's this type of thing, and the big opposition, at least, I mean, the people that talk to the Republicans seem to primarily be, well, that if and when the communists take over, or whoever it is takes over, they have there then the registered list of everybody.
You can go around the houses and get them.
Yeah, can go right around the houses and get the guns. And they know you've got 4 rifles and 3 pistols registered, and so you're going to have to produce them. You can't take them out and hide them in the hills, you know, to form the militia to eventually drive them out.
Frank, you sound like an authority on this.
I've been through this. this is basically, but it's the National Rifle Association, as an association, is the prime mover.
Interestingly enough, the best records on firearms ownership in the United States are the computerized records of the National Rifle Association in Washington. So if somebody really wanted to seize the records of who has them, they go to the NRA files.
And anybody who advocates gun control laws has their patriotism question called communist dupes. I mean, you know, it's at that level. They have no good arguments against it. Obviously, the laws wouldn't be perfect. They could be violated by criminals or might have an underground supply of guns. But they have no evidence on their side. And it's all this appeal to patriotism and little old ladies walking down the street, and some big black man comes up and sort of rape her, and she pulls out her 22 and kills her. And they have little stories in their magazines they print. It's all fear. Their appeals are based on fear, and it's just a very unhealthy thing. And I think most gun owners are misguided by this because they read the NRA literature, which does not tell the truth, and they believe it.
Well, of course, it's also part of the individual rights thing that if a person has a right to remain silent, they also have a right to have their gun.
Or to have his heroin.
Yeah.
Or to have his heroin, yeah. That's absolutely incongruous.
Or his atomic bomb, or whatever.
And they'd be the first person to say that's just terrible to have heroin, and we couldn't permit that. You said we want to regulate the sale and possession of guns, and that's another thing.
So you say that the ex-con in possession isn't enforced. Well, it's enforced all the time. In possession of a concealable weapon. I mean,
if they're caught.
But I mean, the same way, if you do have a registration law, I mean, you're still going to have to catch him.
But if he has to have a license, one of the interesting things that have been found in gun control studies is that in states where there are no gun laws and there's no permit needed, gangsters buy their firearms from legitimate stores. You walk in a sporting goods store, a pawn shop, buy all their weapons. If there is a very strict gun law, they go to a neighboring state which has no gun laws and buy them there. And Massachusetts did a study that 90% or 86% or something of all the guns confiscated from criminals were bought in other states. So, of course, eventually every state should have tough laws.
The FBI is, and the new NISIS, National Information Crime Net on computers, Hoover thinks that the gun regulation will be able to effectively deal with a lot of people that we haven't dealt with before, particularly if we can have the registration information on the computers, and because a great many guns are stolen. And a lot of people that are out running around now that shouldn't be will be picked up under those kind of gun laws. Now, this is that, admittedly, is a theory of the FBI's, and I'm not sure that I 100% go along with it, but I think it's possibly valid.
I mean, still, if you're making a person get a permit to own a handgun, you're still going to have to catch them with a handgun and prove that they didn't have a permit to be able to do anything with it. The same as with the ex-con possession.
Or to people with heroin.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, you're still, if you've got a law in the book, I mean, it's the same, like, it's against the law to commit murder, but you still got to catch the person that committed the murder before you can do anything with them.
But to commit murder, you don't have to somehow obtain this thing, which is a firearm. And there are only so many ways of obtaining firearms. And one thing that the FBI, that J. Edgar Hoover points out, it's not just that these things exist, it's that they're so easily available. I mean, a criminal or a suicidal person doesn't have to go to any trouble. We make it so easy. We just hand people guns. If you had a permit, at least you might have to scrounge around a little bit before I got it. Maybe the opportunity would go by.
I like to remember when I was sheriff for 4 years in Multnomah County, and in 4 years I cannot tell you one case where the possession of a firearm thwarted a crime from being committed. And yet I can sit here and tell you case after case where we've had accidental shootings, where we've had homicides, where we've had suicides, and in one case where somebody thought they were defending their house and fired through the door and killed some drunken slob who thought he was his girlfriend's house a block away, that they had it because they thought they were protecting their house. Police arrived about 10 seconds after the shooting. I just don't think the facts are there, particularly in urban centers with all this nonsense about the great thing a firearm does. Like I say, I go much beyond anything they're proposing. I believe in flat-out confiscation, particularly in urban centers. I don't think anybody is entitled except the police to guns in urban centers.
Well, may I make this suggestion to you? I think Don Paulette has already indicated to you that our procedure is such that we present these articles after they go through subcommittee to the full commission, and that it would be well to make whatever appearance you feel you should at the meeting of the full commission. Now, obviously, this involves a policy consideration by the commission. Whether we want to stay with the present general scheme or whether we want to go to a general plan such as you've outlined. So I would think it would be appropriate for you folks to appear at the commission meeting. And I assume, Don, that you can keep Mrs. Perry notified as to when
sure.
We... And I'm sure of this also, that if you have enough of these that so as to get them in the hands of the commission...
Yeah, but she delivered enough today for all the commission.
Because, well, I certainly, as far as I'm personally concerned, I'd want to look at this and study it and so on. I, of course, in my own case, being, am I in politics, Dave? I guess I'm.
You're elected.
Yeah, I guess I'm in politics, but in a somewhat more aseptic form than some of the others here. I really don't know in my own mind where my own position is. Yeah. But I'm sure that in any event, the question of the broad proposal, as opposed to however you want to term the present proposal or the present law of the weak gun control, or however you want to call it, that's a basic policy question which the full commission has to decide.
Would you be making any recommendations to that committee, or would we just make a presentation again to them?
I don't know. I assume after the recess here that we'll probably sit down and start going through the draft that is presently in front of us. And
now, as I advised Mr. Cormack when I talked with him, our initial draft does not contain any gun control legislation as is contemplated by House Bill 1546. It is not a licensing type of provision as you've proposed here, you know, or that.
Oh, I didn't know that you had a specific proposal.
No, our draft is very much along the lines of, it's a study draft for the purposes of discussion of the subcommittee. Is pretty much along the lines of traditional approach to it, although we're making some changes insofar as the licensing requirements and a few things like that. But insofar as a general overall requirement of gun registration as such, it does not contain that kind of proposal. But that's why we wanted to give you an opportunity to come, you know.
Well, you know, I'm kind of confused here. I'm not sure that it does us any good to go through this if we're going to make a policy decision that we do go much further than this.
Well, we still need our things like ex-felon in possession and this type of thing. I mean, this would be a different degree of crime than just simply having an unregistered firearm.
Yeah, but if you get to the point, supposing the commission was willing to accept the premise that no one in the state of Oregon has any lawful right to possess a pistol or a revolver, except for a police officer.
I think you're dreaming there. I mean, as far as the commission going that far.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I am.
Well, I take it, Don or Roger, you, this was your draft. I take it that some of these provisions would be applicable in any event.
Sure.
And some would have to be radically changed in the event that the full commission voted for a policy of overall licensing and registration.
Yes, as Don said, with some changes. Just offhand, I can't think of anything I'd characterize as a substantial change. This represents a restatement of existing gun control law in Oregon at the present time, both the procedural aspects, licensing and registration, and the substantive crimes.
License to carry a concealed firearm, we proposed that would be handled through the state police rather than on a local level.
Yeah, I think there are... this is one of the things that always bugs me. Somebody go to our chief of police down there is pretty reluctant to issue a permit to carry a concealed weapon, so they can go over to the sheriff's office and get it there because the sheriff doesn't feel the same way about it. And it seems rather ridiculous.
He wants a 4-bit registration fee.
I've already been told by the Sheriff's Association that they probably would oppose any change in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
when they hunt for judges like that, they call it forum shopping.
Did they pass a resolution on that?
Oh, no, they haven't passed a resolution, no. This was just informally. I was notified of this.
Sheriff?
Yeah, we were trying to gather some statistics with respect to the number of permits they issue a year, and I think Roger's got that information here. That we've gathered them, and we've contacted the state police office and talked to them, and the AG's office. And at the time some of this information was being sent to me, I was told that...
There's a great deal of variance between the counties. For example, Multnomah County, it's extremely difficult to get. Coosa County, there were over 1,000 issued.
It's amazing that the number of gun permits issued
in some counties.
I mean, for carrying a weapon, where you least suspect it.
I'm going to stay out of Coosa County.
It might be interesting to compare those statistics
with crime and violence involving guns in those counties.
Because that'll only be conceivable.
There are no statistics on them. In our research, there are very few.
I wouldn't think
Oregon's a bad
record.
State police?
And the state police gets its statistics from the Bureau of Health. State police does not categorize crimes by type of weapon. It's on there, it's in their files, but there's no category saying so many knives, so many.
Oh, I see.
And the medical examiner won't have the information until he's computerized and not quite computerized yet, so.
So there's a very unreliable way of. Meg, is it proper for me to ask question to you?
Sure.
Yeah.
We still have the Fifth Amendment here.
That's why you're right there. System of hearings, but you're never allowed to ask a question back. Why weren't the licensing and registration, some sort of licensing and registration provisions explored at least when you were revising?
Well, they were explored. And in fact, we had dug out House Bill 1546, and we had gone through it and traced the legislative history, such as it was, of that legislation. And of course, we'd examine what some of the other states that are engaged in similar projects, what we're doing, attempting to revise their criminal code. And as project director for the commission, I made the determination that the commission should certainly examine this area and have an opportunity to discuss this area. I'm personally of the opinion, and I'll say here that I'm no braver than the Congress, I suppose. But looking at this from the standpoint of the work of this commission, we are a creature of the legislature. We're not a fourth branch of the government of the state of Oregon. We have been created by the legislature to propose certain recommendations to the legislature. Anything that we recommend may or may not become law, depending upon the action that is given it by the legislature in 1971. My personal feeling is this, that with respect to gun control legislation, to the extent that House Bill 1546 goes, and I'm not speaking for the commission now, you understand, I'm speaking for myself as project director, I feel that with an issue as volatile and controversial as this, that incorporating such provision into our proposal would be the death knell of our entire project, in my opinion, my personal opinion. I think it would be an albatross that would be a way of shooting down the entire code. And so for that reason, rather than see it all go down the tube, although certainly it's not up to me to make these decisions as far as the policy considerations of the commission are concerned. And that's my own personal view, that
it would be able to have taken a substantial step that way in our sex grasp.
Well, you know, though.
Well, no, I don't. I think that gun control legislation would make our sex provisions look like a picnic by comparison.
You know, Don, as a matter of philosophy, as a matter of philosophy, though, unless the Criminal Law Revision Commission is really going to do something, why bother?
Yeah, why bother? You know, young people talk about the system. And the system doesn't work. And if our people in power who have the privilege of making these decisions refuse to face things because they're controversial, then let's just forget it.
Well, it's not a question of being afraid to face things because they're controversial. It's a question of recognizing some of the realities that we have to live with.
But then it's never going to get passed. Each succeeding legislature and Criminal Law Revision Commission is going to say, let's recognize the realities.
Well,
and
of course,
I just can't see that this is the function of your group. I think you should be judging on the merits of the legislation.
Well, I think you go just a little bit far. You take the usual broad indictment of the legislature as being a matter of course. And we hear this a great deal. We're very used to it. However, to say the legislature will not face controversial issues is showing a tremendous ignorance of the process. The sales tax went down by 8-1. The legislature did face the issue and did do something. It wasn't palatable, apparently, to the people. You talk about the legislature, you're talking about what is supposed to be a representative body. That's how the system works. They're supposed to represent not only change, but also the will of the people upon whom the change is being made. But to stand back and just, on a wholesale indictment, say they're all rotten, dirty, lousy dogs,
I'm
don't think the way I do.
People, this is what young people feel because they're people in power. Now this,
that's probably the best reason in the world for not having a 19-year-old vote, too.
You are supposedly peripheral issue. Professional people here considering these laws on the merits of the laws. Now, once you get to the legislature, you might act differently. But I would think in this commission, you would be acting purely on the merits, and you're not going to be the ones who are going to pass these laws, and you won't be held responsible for them in that manner. Besides, I understand that you can have separate sort of packages if you don't want to put this in your whole package and get it shot down.
That's the way to do it.
Well, I think you should bear this in mind. that we've been sitting here doing this for 3.5 years now, I guess. 3 years, Tom? No.
Well, a little over two, actually.
Yeah, 2.5 years, approximately. And we'll keep on doing it for till the 71 legislature. And we were told by the 67 legislature to rewrite the criminal law. And a lot of this stuff is not very exciting, like rewriting burglary statutes and obtaining money by false pretense statutes and arson and all this kind of thing, but it's darned important nonetheless. And we've been doing that along with all the aspects of the criminal law. And there isn't any question that, as Don has pointed out, that one of the things that could happen is that the whole situation of criminal law revision could go down the tube. And gun control is not the only thing that presidential commissions have advocated. The President's Crime Commission advocated very strongly criminal law revision. And that's one thing that this group is charged with doing. That's our main function. Now, you know, life is a process of choosing between competing policies. And you always have some risk when you make a choice between competing policies. And you try to get as much of each one as you can if they're both desirable. But I think it would be short-sighted for this group to put an albatross around the code, if in fact the commission feels it's an albatross, simply because that particular thing happens to be a segment that's perhaps a little more exciting than others. And I don't want to jeopardize the whole work of this commission. If nothing more, from a selfish standpoint, I don't want to see what will ultimately be 4 years of my work go down the tube. Now, I haven't said so far that I agree with what Don has said, because I really don't know yet whether I do agree. But I think it is fair to say that this commission has a broader objective than your objective alone, and I don't think we'd be responsible to the legislature or responsible as citizens either if we left 4 years of work in the room here unpassed and jumped out the window in a glorious kamikaze movement for gun control.
Jim, on the other hand, wouldn't it be a shame to sit here for 4 years and come up with a mundane, meaningless revision that didn't do a damn thing?
Yeah. But I will defy anyone who has been to these meetings consistently throughout to say when this thing gets through that it's a mundane, meaningless revision, because it isn't. It'll be, in my judgment, the best revision in the country. At least in my opinion, it's better than Illinois and Michigan and New York. And here's the guy that can quote you chapter and verse on that. And I don't think there's any question about it.
Is there no way of having a separate statement on gun control or a separate proposal outside the main body of your proposals?
Yes, that would be possible.
As I mentioned before, I think probably that possibility is by this method.
We could also report out our main revision. We could have ancillary revisions. We wouldn't have to have it all in one package. In fact, anything, as I understand it, that we thought was really the kind of thing we're talking about, and we didn't want to see the legislature have to get all wound up on that, we can just separate that and put it over here and still make this recommendation. Isn't that right, Don?
Well, I don't know if the commission has ever...
Yeah. The commission has never made that determination, no.
But it is possible to do that.
We have discussed it at times on various issues.
I think we have, too.
Some of them talked about separating sex out, too. Well, that gets everybody all excited, too, but...
can we quote you, Mr. Chairman? Something important, you know?
Well,
but it means substantial change in the law.
We have been frustrated in the legislature because there was absolutely no opportunity for that thing to be considered. I don't ask for anything that I advise to be accepted. I just ask for the opportunity to be seriously considered on its own merits. And we felt this commission would have less political pressure and would do that job, and a recommendation coming from this commission is going to have much more prestige and power to overcome some sort of, you know, this irrational criticism. And of course this is our bag. We're very committed to this thing. But if nobody will ever speak out truthfully on it, I just think that our government can't work with people saying there are big hunks of light that we, as politicians, we can never tackle. We'll just lie. And
well,
this has been one of the areas. In 1938, there was the Attorney General of the U.S. and the Attorney General of New York pleading for gun control in the Congress. And since that time, though every law enforcement authority has pleaded for it, this is what's happened because everybody's turned tail and ran at the thought.
How many groups came to the legislature in support of your House Bill 1546?
We never got a hearing.
I mean, how many of them contacted the legislature? Any? Other than the Kennedy Action Corps?
There were other people involved. There were several other pieces of legislation on gun control. There were a number of people from around the state that maybe were not organized as such that were writing in.
And we never made any effort to contact anybody because we knew what was going to happen to it. We knew it was doomed, so we never made any effort to organize on this behalf.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak for all of them here, but as far as I'm concerned, anybody that comes down here and makes a serious proposal, I intend to give it serious consideration. Number one. And I think the same thing may fairly be said of everybody on the subcommittee. I'm not so sure that it makes any sense to give it serious consideration today simply because I'm inclined to think that if we can separate in this book what will be there anyway from what might not be there if the commission buys your theory, that we ought to simply spend today on those, what I might say, non-controversial aspects, and then go to the full commission and get a policy ruling on the broad proposal. If the full commission says let's buy the Kennedy Action policy, then I would think that they would say to this subcommittee, you go back and you put the nuts and bolts into it. I'm not sure that it makes sense, particularly since we haven't had an opportunity to really study this, at least I haven't. I don't think it makes sense today to talk about the nuts and bolts of your proposal. So to that extent, I suppose I could be said unwilling today to give it serious consideration. It seems to me that if the full commission as a policy says that's fine, let's charge ahead on that plane, then I would expect they would also say you on subcommittee three are the ones that are going to do the initial charging and initial battle, and then we will do it, and then we would bring it back to the full commission for their review of the thing.
But I hope that you don't misunderstand what I said. I was trying to answer your question
well,
as to why.
Well, I was responding to your statement that you made the decision.
I was trying to answer your question as to why our proposal did not contain any gun registration section in it. But I certainly agree with you that your group should have the opportunity to present your proposal on its merits to the commission. I fully agree with that. And as I told Mr. Cormack that. I'd keep you advised of, you know, and that today was the first time this had come up, and that I would keep him advised of the times and places of the meeting so that you would have full opportunity. And so certainly from the standpoint of getting a hearing, rest assured you will get a fair hearing on this.
No, we appreciate you taking so much time this already. I mean, to yell at you, it's a very frustrating
well,
thing
sure,
to be involved
sure
on.
I know how you be.
Why don't we take a recess?
You know,
let's take about a 5-minute recess. I don't know, Don.
What,
before we get into this. Now, at our meeting, and I had a note here, and I don't know what I did with it, but I noted it at our meeting on inchoate crimes, and it seems to me that was in September we discussed it. We talked about, this was at our meeting September 30th. When we talked about inchoate crimes, remember George Platt brought up the fact that we did not have in the section on inchoate crimes a section similar to what the Modern Penal Code has on possession of a criminal instrument or an instrument of crime. Now the Model Penal Code section, I had Maxine make some copies of their earlier draft on this, which is essentially the same. In fact, it is the same as in their proposed official draft, except that this bracketed subsection 4 has been deleted. I had this made so you'd have an opportunity to look at their commentary on the background of policy in favor of this kind of an approach to the possession of criminal instruments problem. Now, we've talked about this a lot. We talked about it in connection with forgery, things like possession of counterfeiting or forgery device. We talked about it in possession of burglar's tools. And at the last meeting of this subcommittee on the 30th of September, we discussed this. The feeling was, well, we should try to draft a section patterned after the Model Penal Code to give you an option in dealing with this question, rather than having a specific section in each of our articles. Now, George Platt and I disagree on this, frankly. I don't like this Model Penal Code approach myself, but he feels it's an inchoate crime, that possession is really, it's not quite the same as an attempt, but it falls into this area of preparatory criminal conduct, that if you possess a burglar's tools, then this is a step towards the commission of a burglary. And or if you possess a tool to break into a parking meter, that that's just preparatory to committing that crime. Now, frankly, I tried to draft a section based on this Model Penal Code, but there's so much in there that I think is going to give us all kinds of trouble that I thought maybe we ought to discuss this further. For example, this under section 5.06 subsection 1 paragraph B, it got this in there: anything commonly used, this is one of the definitions of an instrument of crime, anything commonly used for criminal purposes and possessed by the actor under circumstances which do not negative unlawful purpose. Now, I tried to find out what they meant by that in their commentary, but they don't say a thing about it. And I think I see what they're trying to get at. You've got two kinds of instruments. You've got something that's obviously designed to be a criminal instrument, such as
like a parking meter key.
Yeah. Got no other use but to use to
break open a phone booth.
But some other thing, for example, a blowtorch, for example. A burglar could use a blowtorch to burn a safe, but he could also use it to fix his plumbing, I suppose. But and then they've got these sections on presumptions. And I think by the time you're all through with this, plus trying to solve the problem of dealing specifically with firearms, which I think we just about have to do when you're talking about an ex-con in possession, for example, that sort of thing, that we're going to end up with a general section plus all these little satellite sections out here anyway. And if that's the case, then
forget the general and just have the satellites
deal with
anyway.
Specifics. And if we're talking about burglar's tools and we want to make that a crime, then let's deal with it as possession of burglar's tools. Or if it's a forgery device, let's define what we mean by a forgery device and make it a crime to possess it with the intent to commit a forgery. But it's just a question of approach and
well, that sounds better, especially since Platt isn't here to
right. I thought it's a good day to bring it up. No, he knows how I feel about this, because we've discussed it a number of times in the meetings. But in fact, we discussed it at great length when our forgery article was before the commission. And at that time, we deleted some sections with the understanding that it would be dealt with in the inchoate crimes. Well, as it turns out, we didn't deal with it in inchoate crimes. And of course, that's more my fault than George's. But I don't know whether, if you like this model penal code approach, then I'm not sure I can do anything with it other than just the way they've got it. Because I'm not sure what they mean by some of these things.
I'd just soon jettison the model penal code approach and use the one we're apparently embarked on.
Because insofar as firearms are concerned, without this section 506, this firearms draft would take care of the possession of firearms and dangerous weapons and that sort of thing. And we already have a section on burglars' tools, but it will necessitate
counterfeiting devices.
Well, it will necessitate going back to those sections in forgery and putting some sections back into that forgery article.
We didn't have anything on narcotics paraphernalia either, the needles.
I sure am happy to see the word dirt back in here. I missed that when that was revised out. The exemptions. First had a right to keep a dirk and a shotgun.
I never could quite figure out what the difference between a dirk and a dagger was. But
well, we've got a slung shot.
Yeah.
Or a stiletto. That was something that you
start
that type of candy?
Following through
Peter Paul's stilettos?
No.
Walnut.
Heaven's sake. And anyways, Peter Paul's mouth, not Walnuttos.
No, I think they make the Walnuttos.
Yeah, they're making Walnuttos again now.
Are they?
It used to be one of my favorite candies.
You know why that came back? I saw an article in Time Magazine, I think. Was it Laugh-In? The little dirty old man who always sidles up?
Yeah.
And he came out second with a one Walnutto?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
The public demand picked up immediately, and now they're making him like crazy.
Okay, Roger, well, if you want to go ahead on your...
Why are narcotic drugs and firearms and deadly weapons?
Oh, we use those terms on people that can't possess deadly weapons.
Why do we define narcotic drugs
in
this
fashion? That's the first thing I use.
What's that?
In this fashion. In other words, we just defined it in this article, or in the narcotics article.
No, we didn't.
I assume this was drafted before. Right.
No, we didn't. In our narcotics thing, we say a narcotic drug is that defined in ORS 474.
Yeah, this is
going
to. Yeah, this will have to be changed. It's just a question of reconciling these drafts. This was drafted before we made these changes in our narcotics.
Yeah, we have now defined dangerous drug.
Well, then we could say in 474, 475, and the narcotics article. Yeah. Wouldn't that do it?
Why do we have to define it anymore? We've already got it defined.
Hmm?
We already have it defined once.
No, but just say the definition of narcotic and dangerous drugs as contained in 474, 475, and the narcotics article.
Or just the narcotics article would do it, I think, because...
Well, but the narcotics article doesn't define narcotics.
Yeah.
It refers back to 474.010.18.
Well,
yeah, but it would be defined by reference, you see. So, I mean, if we refer to our article, that would carry it on through to the other. I don't think you need to do both.
Well, I'm not sure about that, because in the narcotics article, it says, as used in this article, the definitions in ORS 474.010 apply to this article.
Yeah, but then we would
context other.
But then we would then we would incorporate them by reference here.
Okay.
So.
Now that's just drafting.
Yeah, I mean, we'd be all right on that. That would get it into this article. But I'd agree we don't need to we don't want to define it the way we've got it here.
I take it that in sub 2 that really should be slingshot.
No, it's
slungshot.
Slingshot is what everybody calls it, but it's slungshot.
Well,
like
yeah,
I
right.
just
It's a different type of weapon.
Yeah, it's not a slingshot. It's a slingshot, and it's a bag filled with shot. That's what it is. It's not like a slingshot.
Is that right?
Right.
Why was my education so badly neglected?
I don't even know what a dirk is.
It's like a leather bag filled with shot, and you sap people in with it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
And it's also like, you know, there are two different ways of spelling marijuana. How do we spell it?
I think I ended up using the H instead of the J.
Okay.
But it doesn't seem to make...
No, the dictionary doesn't make any difference, but statutorily it's H. So we always charge H. In this appeal I just got through arguing, everywhere where we have the marijuana H, in the indictment, you know, they put the indictment, they have a little sick and that type of thing, when actually it's the statutory spelling that we were using.
I love to read those six and think, you know, look back at who was a lawyer, who's that illiterate idiot that doesn't know how to write a sentence.
A small mass of metal or stone fixed on a flexible handle, strap, or the like used as a weapon.
It's not like a slingshot that you sling things with, though.
It doesn't come loose.
It's used to beat people over the head. Mm.
Well, should we include slingshot?
No.
Because I always thought slingshot...
No, because it's a form of... A slingshot wouldn't be a form of blackjack.
No. No, but I always thought in the definition, you know, that we have now, that slingshot is slingshot. That is a judge says you live and learn. Okay.
And another thing that I'm not generally aware of is a gravity knife.
Okay.
Now, what is the difference between a gravity knife and a switchblade knife?
A switchblade knife, when you press it, the spring comes right out. You know, you press it and the knife comes boom like that. The gravity knife is one that you push the button and snap like that and it comes out.
Oh, I see.
It takes the switchblade, you just snap it and the spring brings it out. Gravity knife, you gotta push the lever and snap it.
I'm trying to say a switchblade knife means a knife, the blade of which opens automatically by hand pressure applied to a button, spring, or other device in its handle. Right, Frank? Section 13.
I also had a question on public servant. There we use a restrictive definition as opposed to the broader definition we use in our other articles. I suppose that's calculated.
Yeah, we delete... actually, it really only deletes jurors.
Yeah, we didn't want jurors to be included there.
And sub 7, you've got, or any other dangerous instrument. Must have a blade from the definition. Gosh, there must be lots of dangerous instruments. Dangerous instruments that have blades, scalpels maybe, or does a syringe have a blade? Is that considered as a blade?
Not usually over 3.5 inches in length.
Spinal tap.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Well, so that if you had a situation where they were, I mean, were had stabbed somebody, you could call it a knife.
Well, I think we'd call all of them knives, really.
Yeah, we call them all knives, you see, dagger, dirk, knife.
Means any instrument with a blade over 3.5 inches long. Although I do like dirk.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah,
but you know, these other states, I noticed they've all kept things like dirk in there. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what the value is for.
What is a dirk?
It's a double-edged stabbing type of knife, isn't it?
Yeah.
But why is that different than some other description?
It's, it's like a dagger, sort of.
Because the
dagger is
British
only sharpened
Navy used
on
to
one
use
side. Where's your dagger?
No, a dagger is sharp on both sides, too.
Just think it's a groovy
so
term.
So is a stiletto.
Is defined as a dagger.
Why don't you try a stiletto?
Okay.
I think they're all double-edged stabbing type knives as opposed to a single-edged cutting knife. That is a stiletto, a dirk, and a dagger.
Stiletto, a type of dagger with a slender pointed blade. Dirk.
The only place I've ever seen dirk referred to is in historical novels, generally having to do with the sea. climbed aboard with his dirk in his teeth.
The only place I've ever seen is the Oregon Longhorn.
A dagger is a short weapon.
Kind of lewd. Doesn't
we're back at our whole section again, aren't we?
Can't stay away from it.
And he approached me with his dirk in his Maybe it's time to go home.
See, you've been undone by the Kennedy Action. Yeah,
I always thought it was an actor, Dirk Douglas.
Dirk Stiletto would be a good name.
That would be a good name, yeah. Wouldn't it, for a movie star? Dirk
good
Stiletto.
As Rip.
Rip Torn.
Somehow the meeting is deteriorating.
Dirk Dagger.
Oh boy.
You know, under peace officer, this is something that I brought up once before when we were defining peace officer for another article. And this goes way back, and this is a definition that's in Oregon statutes now, including a constable. Are there still constables around? This seems kind of like antique.
Clackamas County has a constable, but he only serves civil process.
Montgomery County used to have it.
Yeah, we don't
do
anymore.
Didn't that come up at the full commission and somebody say that over in Eastern Oregon somewhere, you know, that in some of the cities over there that they still call their chief of police or their police officer a constable?
Yeah, but he's under municipal policeman. In sub-9, we have a couple of constables in Washington County.
I've got my peculiar problem again, as we define peace officer.
I hope it's not contagious.
Again here, how is this peace officer used here as far as the right to carry a gun, you mean? Here again, we got the campus police officer who by statute is a peace officer, though, so I suppose he's probably covered.
Yeah, I talked to the legal counsel of the University of Oregon, or the Board of Education on that issue, and he felt that he should be included.
He should be included?
Yeah, he was going to write a letter, but we haven't received
it. Well, that wasn't on this draft, though. That
it
was
on the
escape.
It was on peace officer, on the escape article.
Yeah.
But I know that this is something that I've...
Well, we should include the...
Well, the only thing that has to be done, though, Frank, is that we flag that section on education. That's where it is in the education code, isn't it?
Why would he be excluded?
So, because, well, we don't want to exclude him, but you see, there's a section, was it 4 or something or other, 465 or wherever it is, that refers back to the definition of peace officer. So we want to make sure that that statute is amended to conform with our definition so that it would refer to whatever section in the Oregon Code this ends up to be. I mean, our definition of peace officer.
Yeah, but we use we define peace officer a variety of places, like in the escape, you see. And I know now we got the situation where, I mean, the statute eluding a police officer. Although he is a peace officer, he's not covered because it's a section like this, means a sheriff, constable, marshal, municipal policeman, or member of the Oregon State Police. It's not a crime to elude a campus patrolman because he doesn't come under that definition, although he is a peace officer by this Board of Higher Education section. Whenever we set out peace officer here, like, we would certainly be excluding the campus policeman.
We haven't covered anti-tank guns and all that kind of jazz, have we?
No.
Otherwise, we're going to let that go. We're going to allow anti-tank guns to...
Only if they're concealable, it's all right. It's prohibited.
You know, now, even if you don't want to even consider going this far, don't you think it's kind of ridiculous to allow private parties to have anti-tank guns and artillery pieces and bazookas and mortars and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
That's somehow there's got to be covered. Hand grenades.
Molotov cocktails.
Any other question on the definition section?
I feel as long as it has something to do with their, I might say, their right to bear arms, if that's where we come under the peace officer thing, or that we should include the campus policeman.
Well, but as I understand from what Don says, that would be done by an appropriate amendment in the education code.
Wasn't that the question that came up on escape, because it refers now to...
Well, the education code says that the campus policeman shall have all the powers and authority of a peace officer as defined in
section,
the code,
yeah,
which is defined as this. In other words, they give them the same authority as a peace officer.
Yeah, but you'd have to...
So I assume that would mean that they would have the same authority in this article.
If they were changed to wherever we use the term peace officer, it could do that.
Or you could say this, I suppose. Could say, or any other person designated by another statute as mm-hmm. such.
Yeah. But whenever we define peace officer as being something other than...
Well, it's possible. We've used peace officer now so many times in different articles that it may be put into the general definitions. I think we've used it, what, Don, about seven or eight different articles?
We haven't used it.
Not that many times?
No, we've used about three different
this
articles.
This one, riot, obstructing, well, four of mine that I can think of.
I don't think there's any place where we've defined it any differently than we define it here, though. I mean, we've defined it the same way each place.
I think probably so. I think it's...
Your feeling is we should go in every one of those and insert campus policeman? Is that what you want to do? Or?
Yeah, either... I guess that's what I'm saying, although if we had just one definition for the criminal code of peace officer and this higher education statute referred to that section, it'd be okay. But unless that higher education one then refers to each one of these statutes that come out, you're going to find them peace officers for certain circumstances and not for others.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Would that in fact be the case, that you may not want it to have him a peace officer for all purposes? Or do you want him to be a peace officer for...
Well, I think
to
probably
be able to do anything any other policeman can do.
I think that probably he should be the same as any other type of peace officer. It was just a thing like when I forget what section of law we were on when I brought it up the first time, and I had no strong feeling about it one way or another. I just knew that our campus policeman wouldn't be covered under that section. It was escape, I guess, is what we're talking about.
You get an area of penal officers, like guards at prison, too. The state of California includes those people in the definition of peace officer only when dealing with persons confined to the California Bill Authority. With a limited definition of peace officer. Now, how would they be covered here at all?
Mm-hmm. We define detention facility, and they're included of personnel in charge of detention facilities.
It's a defense to be a public servant entrusted with maintaining the order and security of detention facilities.
Mm-hmm.
That means a guard can carry a gun if he wants to, or has to, or whatever.
Well, what about a corrections officer that's going around the state picking people up? He's covered too.
He would be under care and custody.
Well, now your corrections code has a section now that says that they are peace officers. They have the same authority as a peace officer. That is your parole and probation people, for example. And we're not intending to change any of that.
Any other questions on definitions?
But, well, now I take it that you think we ought to have a definition in here someplace that would include things like tank guns and whatnot.
Yeah, I just wrote down, if we're not going to handle it now, to bring it up but for the full commission, artillery, bazookas, anti-tank guns, hand grenades, bombs, etc.
Yeah, now, that's
military,
one thing that can be said for the Model Penal Code. They do have, on their prohibited offensive weapons, they have defined any bomb, machine gun, sawed-off shotgun. Well, they don't have tank gun in there, though.
What is a tank gun?
Well, it's something that, well, they had a film here about 2 years ago on firearms control, and they showed these guys out in Arizona desert, and they had this one guy, I don't remember how many anti-tank guns he had, and they fired it up at the face of the cliff, and about half the face of the cliff came down.
Oh, like a 75 millimeter.
Yeah, it's something you could blow the whole side of this building out with them. And there's no federal law and there's no state law now prohibiting them. You know, people run around with them.
It's a portable thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very portable.
Carried, on a person and that can
like
be shot by a person holding it.
Yeah,
it's not physically portable, is it?
Yeah, you can pick them up and carry them.
Yeah,
there's a variety of kinds.
It's like a mortar kind of, anyway. That, I mean, that's the thing.
We need to have those.
Can be carried by a person. And
pretty hard to justify that this is a sporting weapon. You know, they're going to go hunt and deal with it or something like that.
It's prohibited by the game code.
Unless you're after Democrats.
Ah, I see.
Depends on where you're hunting, too. And the season.
Well, I don't have any objection to putting that stuff in.
It does seem like kind of an oversight.
Once you make a motion, we'll have the staff draft the appropriate subsection.
I so move.
And get a list of Army ordnance to...
This would prohibit owning or possessing?
Yeah, they seem like those are... Certainly things should be prohibited. I can't see any valid use for
federal law.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's why none of these state codes have specifically dealt with it, because there's federal statutes prohibiting such things, I know.
Right?
Uh-huh. Title 18, under possession of illegal weapons and so
on. Are tank guns and bazookas, mortars, and bombs, are they all included?
Well, I can't say specifically that they are. I don't know.
I believe they are. I think they do have a procedure for licensing and registration of those type of weapons. I saw that on the FBI about a month ago.
Why don't you check?
Getting started.
Yeah.
Why don't you check on
our commentary?
Why don't you check on authority that would be perhaps a little more acceptable to the, let's say, the Kennedy Action Corps?
You do have the problem as far as museums and things, I suppose. How about that crazy cannon that sits out in front of the armory out here?
They don't have to be operable. The thing of it is, now, right down now in the Import Plaza in Portland, they have a Swedish cannon that's about 6 feet long or something like that. That thing is operable. You get a shell, you can fire that thing, you know, and you can blow a car to smithereens. Well, I wouldn't want the Panthers or the Minutemen or somebody to run around buying those things up. I think that's kind of ridiculous.
Why don't you check
the federal
situation, and then we'll see. I think everybody here is probably inclined to want to put something in like that.
Yeah.
But we ought to find out just what we need. I also notice in subsection 14, I'm not sure that's a typographical error or what. Unlawfully means in violation of the provisions of sections 2 to 4 of this article, or except as authorized by any other Oregon statute. Now, I don't understand that language. You mean, or except as forbidden?
Well,
he means that unless authorized by any other Oregon statute.
Unlawfully means except as authorized by any other Oregon statute. It means other than that which is authorized.
Oh, I see. Unlawfully means except. Except as authorized. Okay.
would it be more understandable as, or unless authorized by any other ordinance statute?
Yeah, the Supreme Court putting sick after that, aren't you?
Unlawfully means except if authorized. Okay. Section 2?
Well, sections 2, 3, and 4 are the licensing and registration sections.
Hearing your statement, I know why you took the sheriffs out, but it seems to me it ought to have some local issuing thing, too. Darn state police are so hard to work with or deal with.
Chuck. You get a uniformity you don't get, though, by dealing with individual
plus
sheriffs.
You get one place for the records.
That's right.
Which it would seem to me to be a big improvement over what we have now.
You could require a copy of everyone.
Well, if you want any kind of a background investigation, it has any validity.
Yeah,
I think the state police are best equipped to do it.
Run the records check. Our statute now, it doesn't even require a fingerprint. You know, and we would require that under this draft. You don't even need to give your fingerprint.
This one you're going to get a lot of heat on, I'll tell you that.
Think so?
Oh, I bet you. I can just see the sheriffs and the town marshals and all those people.
Well, you're going to get a lot of people. Like the same way, I'd say that, you know, that our chief of police is very reluctant to issue a permit to carry a concealed weapon. But our sheriff, unless the guy tells him that he's going to go out and shoot somebody with it, give him a permit to carry the gun. I mean, I don't say he doesn't, just because they're going to shoot somebody with it isn't grounds to not give them the permit. It's as long as they're going to shoot somebody in self-defense, it's okay to have a permit.
I just had a conversation with David Hain on the phone, and David Hain, formerly the assistant to Sid Lezak, now is a community affairs coordinator for the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. And apparently the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office was designated as the body to kind of watch us. And also to make recommendations to this to the Sheriff's Association and back to this body. So David's going to be coming down here. I told him I'd bring him down here soon to one of these meetings. And I think that we'll find that if that is the person we have to work with, it'll be a very amiable kind of relationship, and there shouldn't be any problem at all.
Yeah. You know, since our inception, we've had a committee of the sheriffs that we've sent notices to and drafts to and everything. So. And I think one of them was the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. And then they have their headquarters, you know, for their, I can't remember her name at the moment, but we send her copies.
Oh, Mrs. Rose?
Yeah.
Arlene
Rose.
Mrs.
Rose?
Oh, she's McMinnville, and she does the PR work for the Sheriff's Association. I think on a virtually unpaid or very small pay basis. It's part-time.
Don't know her.
She's down here in San Francisco. She's a lobbyist for the sheriffs.
Well, Section 2 restates the present law, except in a couple of particulars. We raised the fee from 50 cents to $3 to keep up with inflation.
Oh, Lord, you have to have this whole thing sent to Ways and Means. Realize that?
No.
That's what's going to happen. It's got financial implications. Sure. It's going to go to Ways and Means. It's going to lay there.
Yeah,
why don't you put the fee back?
The fee.
Yeah.
I thought about this, but I'm not sure that how we can get around it.
Put in a companion bill to raise the fee, but gosh, don't hang the whole. Let those idiots get their hands on something like this, and then for any reason, they'll sit doing all the rest of it too.
Yeah, I don't think we want to see that happen.
No, we don't. Huh? Mm-hmm. But we talked to Holly Holcomb on it, and they felt they would have to have an increase in their budget. They wanted to do this, but they figured they need a full-time.
If you're going to have the state police do it, they're going to have to hire somebody to do this.
Well, that's their budget, though. That's not this bill.
Oh.
Well, I think their budget would take an increase, and maybe along with it.
Well, we got something in here for $5. This furnishing forms by the state printer. $5 per 100 leaves.
Yeah, that's the present law. That was raised from $3 to $5.
Yeah. Well, that would have financial implications, too.
Yes.
Well, I know Don could check with someone in fiscal, but I would think it would have, and it would probably have to go through Ways and Means for an authorization.
Oh my God.
Now, it might be a very quick thing, and it might just be the
well,
bill
who
is
would
there.
Want to do that but I mean, we're not asking for any money.
No, but you're raising it. No, I could be all wet, but it might be wise to check it anyway.
Who determines that? Ultimately, the speaker.
Speaker and the President of the Senate.
Yeah, but doesn't some functionary review them?
Oh, yeah, the fiscal staff reviews every bill.
I mean, review them, though, for referability?
Why don't you check that out, Don? We can find out,
yeah.
Relatively.
Yeah.
That's where the power of the speaker is.
That's your life. That's
life.
He says goes to Ways and Means, and it goes to Ways and Means.
But Holly said, well, he
for
would
local
just
or federal affairs.
Provide for his budget, you know, and ask for enough additional to pay for a full-time person to handle the records and whatnot, and that it would be offset, as far as the state were concerned, by the increase in the fees. But I suppose that you'd need some sort of a determination made as to how much money, at least an estimate, how much revenue this would raise, and whether or not this would be sufficient to take care of any increase in the budget. So it may, you're right.
Well, it's
you
getting
well checking.
Yeah.
Here is another implication too. You see, you're making it a little more difficult to get. You may not have near as many of these. So Holly Holcomb may not be right as far as needing an additional person.
Now, can you grant a permit to carry a concealable firearm for a very specified period of time, say 3 days or 5 days? Or what's a guy do when he carries? For instance, when
I had a bond issue,
had to deliver them to Black and Company. And they said it's your responsibility to get them here, which is the first time. Well, it's the first time we ever sold them, not to a bank. And so here we were carrying, I forgot what it was, $800,000 worth of bonds, which had been registered with the treasurer, into Portland. And the superintendent wanted to carry a gun along. And I said, God, no. You know. But could he have gotten a permit for one day to carry a weapon?
Annually renewed.
You get your permit and it's good for a year, isn't it?
Yeah.
No matter what, huh?
Right.
Yeah. Well, he wouldn't necessarily have to carry a concealed weapon. He could carry it on his hip enough.
This is just to carry it concealed.
Could have laid a shotgun in the back seat of the car, I suppose. But
that's right.
Of course, this is really Pandora's box. Like this must come up. A jewelry salesman or somebody picking up a delivery of something that's valuable.
Mm-hmm. When I was a deputy, I stopped a guy who had a 6-gun on each hip. Of course, they weren't concealed. And he got out of the car, and he had his hands resting on the butts of these 6-guns. You know, no violation of law. Scared the hell out of me.
Well, yeah, and this, of course, this is criticized by the Model Penal Code, this kind of an approach. They say that in this day and age, that as far as urban situation and whatnot, you'd probably be better off to have people carrying weapons in a more discreet fashion than, know, to make it illegal to carry
the guy
it concealed,
in the bar.
But perfectly legal to carry it strapped to his hip or something, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got calls from barkeeps. We got some nut in here. He's got a 6-gun strapped on his hip. He's in here drinking, getting drunk. You know, what do you do then? Well, your deputy goes in there. He figures out some way to get him out of there. But you know, it's kind of a difficult situation.
Do you think we ought to come back to this again and work our way through it?
Well,
and see what we come up with. I'm a little reluctant to ask the chairman to bring up this gun registration at the meeting tomorrow.
Well, why don't we talk to Tony tomorrow and see what his thoughts are on that. The general outline that we had talked about. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know, maybe the commission will say, well, don't bother us with it. You produce whatever you want to produce and we'll take a look at it. So, seems to me that the way we talked about it is the way we ought to approach it. But I don't know, Tony may have some different. Why don't we just discuss it with him informally?
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, but I just, wasn't going to ask him to bring it up for a commission decision tomorrow on the policy question.
Oh, no. Well, no,
I think we more or less indicated to
them. Yeah, I don't see how we could, in fairness to them.
Don, I see that I took that book up and left it with you, and it belongs to the gal. So, will you see if that's returned?